Good afternoon. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hankerings, a sort of Hank Jones Polysports Redux here on Global Patriot Radio. We can be found at blogtalkradio.com 7 days a week. Let's run those down. Mondays at 6 p.m. Eastern, the Vito Esposito Show with Big Al. So they get right to it with Mamma Mia No Sharia. Tuesdays, they're sort of in flux. Vito and Al will sort of take care of what happens on that day. Wednesdays, 6 p.m. Eastern, me, Hank Jones, with Hank Jones Poly Sports. Thursdays, again, sort of in flux, but I'm taking it for right now, and that's why you've got a short edition today of Hankerings, which is just sort of things Hank wants to talk about, not things that are necessarily germane to everyone else's life or to today's situations. Fridays, conservative casual Friday. Normally, Andrew Herod is in around noon. Vito's taken after a couple of weeks, from what I understand. Saturday nights, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. That comes every Saturday from 10 p.m. Eastern time to midnight. And then Sundays at 3 p.m. Eastern, Eric is in with the Cross and Crescent discussion, real interfaith dialogue. And when I say real interfaith dialogue, I mean actual interfaith dialogue, not spewing hatred or trying to do nasty stuff to get Eric in trouble. It's so bush league and so amateur. It's not surprising when you hear the people that are doing it, but it's still unbelievably immature. Let's just say that. Quick basketball news. Yesterday, the Big Ten tournament, Ohio State knocked off Wisconsin, so they will take on my Iowa Hawkeyes at 2:30 Eastern today at the United Center in Chicago. Minnesota knocked off Nebraska. Yeah, 9-20 Minnesota now, or 8-21 Minnesota now, 9-21, takes down Nebraska, 16-16 now. Probably won't even get the NIT. Yeah, that's the same Nebraska team that swept the Hawkeyes and took us from a second seed in the Big Ten tournament to the fifth seed, where today we take on at 2:30 Ohio State, and it's really just kind of, I don't know. We talked about it yesterday. It's just so incredibly frustrating to see the inconsistency. Game going on right now, Michigan and Rutgers. Right now, Michigan up 28-25 early in the second half. That, as they say, is a defensive battle. You have two very good defensive teams. Rutgers coming into the game 18-13, Michigan 17-14. Basically, the loser of this is probably out of the NCAA tournament. If Rutgers wins, they're probably in. Probably don't have to do anything the next round. If Michigan wins, they probably still have to win another. They're just, they finished, They got a first day bye in the Big Ten tournament, but they faded. They were a second at one point, and they faded down the stretch. And they just had too many bad losses. I mean, Iowa's got a couple bad losses, but Michigan has really too many bad losses. So I think if they lose today, they're out. Whereas Rutgers might have an outside chance. It'd be 18-14, but who knows. Later on, Penn State and Illinois. Both are probably in. Penn State may be in a play-in status, especially if they lose today. Minnesota and Maryland. Obviously, Maryland wins that. They're probably in. They're probably in anyway, as is Illinois, most likely. So that's the way it's looking today. Said I was going to get into my little anti-Second Amendment judge rant. So from the Epic Times yesterday, right before Hank Jones Polysports went on, I get the email from the Epic Times. I get them every day. I subscribe. Said federal judge sides with Biden administration ruling Missouri Second Amendment law unconstitutional. They put unconstitutional in quotes. So basically, it's a Missouri law that would have penalized police for enforcing federal gun laws was ruled unconstitutional by a federal judge Tuesday, handing a win to the Biden administration, DOJ, that filed suit against the law last year. Now, DOJ said the law was undermining federal drug and weapons investigators by placing heavy fines of up to $50,000 on police departments if they infringed on Missourians' Second Amendment rights by following any federal laws. In other words, if there were federal laws that violated the Second Amendment, infringed on the rights of Missourians under the Second Amendment, police officers, police offices, departments, etc., were going to be fined up to $50,000. So it was called the Second Amendment Preservation Act. It was ruled, quote, invalid, null, void, and of no effect by U.S. District Court Judge Brian Wimes, an Obama appointee. Now, Missouri AG Andrew Bailey said he is going to appeal the ruling at the Eighth Circuit Court and expects, quote, a better result there. Now, look, this is my problem with this. There are, I don't want to say limits, but there are under the Second Amendment, there are some vague, I mean, it's kind of vague. Some people dispute what a militia is. Not sure why. It's pretty clear what a militia is. It's not the military. It's any and all able-bodied citizens of a given state. That's your militia. It's not limited to men or women. Not the same as a military. It allows citizens to protect themselves. Simple as that. I'm not sure why people find that vague or why people find that tough to interpret. But I've actually, like I said before, I've had a retired judge that has told me, "Oh, you mean the one that says we're allowed to have a military? Dude, that was a given. We had a military in order to become a free country. This is quite different. You can be called out by your governor." Now, as a practical matter, it doesn't happen now because we have a professional standing military, which is what our founding fathers did not want. People say, where does it say? There are hundreds of thousands probably of books that you can read that talk about writings and letters back and forth. Here's something that most people don't want to admit, but when you bring it up, there are several that wrote about it. One of the debates of the original Second Amendment had nothing to do with whether people should have the right to bear arms. That was an understood fact. What was debated was, who pays for it? Do the citizens pay for it? Does the government pay for it? The reason that was in play, because the question wasn't whether Americans had the right to keep and bear arms. It was, Americans have the duty to keep and bear arms. And several pointed out, Jefferson amongst them, that Bree Slope probably didn't say it that way back then, but basically that, you know, look, if you're requiring people, you're telling people like Quakers who are pacifists and other groups that were pacifists, you're telling them that they have to engage. And we cannot in good conscience, given the First Amendment, cannot in good conscience require those people to keep and bear arms. And that was pretty much agreed upon. Everyone pretty much, you know, yeah, that's true. And it also became an issue of, you know, do we fund this? How do we fund this? We can't possibly fund this. Because also incumbent upon it would have been training. That was another discussion, the Second Amendment. A well-regulated militia? No, not well-regulated in terms of regulating them. Well-regulated in terms of well-heeled, well-oiled, proper working order. A well-placed, properly working militia being necessary for a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So Missouri's Second Amendment Preservation Act, which Governor Mike Parsons signed into law in June of 2021, declares invalid all federal laws infringing on the right to bear arms under the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution and Missouri Constitution. It defined infringements as certain taxes, certain registration and tracking laws, certain prohibitions on the possession, ownership, use, or transfer of a specific type of firearm, and confiscation orders. Now, it's pretty clear this came out of the 2020 case with that husband and wife that I forget their names already. The husband and wife that, you know, a mob was walking past their house to head. They said to a mayor or a police chief or whatever in Missouri, and they came out on the street or on their front yard, bearing arms, and pretty much letting the people know, you come on here, you're trespassing. We will. Now, of course, they were fined, they were prosecuted, I believe eventually pardoned, rightfully so, by the way. The fact that, that St. Louis district attorney, by the way, is under so much fire for various infringements and misconduct. So basically, though, the Second Amendment Preservation Act declared that federal supremacy does not apply to federal laws that restrict or prohibit the manufacture, ownership, and use of firearms, firearms accessories, or ammunition within the state because such laws exceed the scope of the federal government's authority. Further impose the duty of protecting the rights of law-abiding citizens to keep and bear arms in the hands of courts and law enforcement agencies in the state. Basically, what they were saying is red flag laws with no basis in fact, red flag declarations, claims of misuse, etc. Basically, it says no public officer or state or local employee has the authority to enforce firearms laws declared invalid by the act. However, state employees may accept aid from federal officials in an effort to enforce Missouri laws. Sovereign immunity shall not be an affirmative defense under this act. It wasn't illegal for police to aid federal officials in pursuit of a suspect. Did not prohibit them in cases of felony crimes involving weapons or controlled substance violations. In other words, somebody who was shooting up a McDonald's, that's pretty much understood. You have violated the law. You have breached your Second Amendment right. So Department of Justice argued that the act violated Constitution by ignoring federal supremacy. And it said also that they said that they sought a declaration that state and local officials may participate in federal task forces or investigations without fear of penalty. Okay, so here's where the real, probably the struggle was. Feds love to stomp on states in certain cases. You'll notice they don't stomp on rioters in Minnesota, Minneapolis and the Twin Cities, or Chicago, or your typical crap hole cities where there is no law and order. They don't stomp on that. Why? Those are people doing their bidding. What happened in Atlanta recently? They tried and they failed because the locals said, we're not going to allow it. And that's one of those areas where you have a real disconnect. Now, cities like Chicago, yeah, there's a disconnect between police and the police unions and liberal mayors and council persons. Georgia, it's a little different. There's a vast difference. Now, there are some exceptions. Keisha Lance Bottoms, who recently resigned from the Biden administration, as a mayor, she may have been somewhat liberal, but she was also on the side of law and order. She was not anti-police. She did not hamstring the police. She allowed police to do their job because she understands that there is a difference between civil disobedience and rioting. She didn't use it to further her own career. But in this case, this is where I think, really looking through it, this is where I think the challenge, it's what they're saying is the Fed law enforcement has to be able to come in some cases, without notifying, without advanced cooperation from state and local law enforcement. And, you know, that's a fine line. It is a fine line because state and locals, I mean, if they're in danger, they have to be able to know that. But if it compromises an investigation or an operation, you know, that has to be understood as well. So that's the fine line. I don't think that's what Merrick Garland would believe. I think Garland just simply says anything that knocks down the Second Amendment is okay with him. So let's get to our first Laffy. This is good. So it's from the Babylon Bee, and it says, Ukraine asks Merrick Garland to leave and never come back. They already have enough corrupt officials in their country. Yeah, Merrick Garland. Can you believe that guy was nominated for the Supreme Court? I know. Merrick Garland nominated for when you look at his record just within the Biden administration, corruption doesn't begin to cover it. I mean, he absolutely disregards the law for political expediency. I mean, that's anathema to our whole system. So let's get to a little Tommy Bolin. I played Bustin' Out for Rosie to open things up. That's the opening song on his Private Eyes album. Great stuff. This is back when he was with the James Gang. And again, this is where he was coming into his own. This is where he was starting to really be known. They talked about, you know, different artists talk about, he followed Joe Walsh in the James Gang. He followed Ritchie Blackmore with Deep Purple. So it really became he was still under a shadow, but he was also coming into his own. Anybody that would disagree just didn't listen enough to him. So here's Tommy Bolin with the James Gang, Must Be Love. that was definitely not your typical James Gang sound, obviously, which when you think of the James Gang, you think of Joel Walsh's vocals and guitar playing as well. But that was with Tommy Bolin, obviously, and Roy Kenner on the vocals. So that was Must Be Love. That was from their Bang album. And obviously different, a different sound for them and a, you know, an emerging sound for Tommy Bolin, who was still at that point pretty much locked into playing rock and stuff and rock and some blues. And, you know, he didn't really have the fusion influences that he developed later. And especially as he, and as I talked about, he and Jeff Beck played together on a, like a private gig, impromptu gig. And, you can find that on YouTube, by the way. I did find that out. You can find it on YouTube, and amazing stuff. And I think they were a heavy influence on each other. And, of course, Bolin was – his last gig was warming up for Jeff Beck and Peter Frampton in Miami before his death. So that's just – you know, that's when we're starting to see an established Tommy Bolin. So back to – so he's an Obama appointee. And – you can't be shocked by that, obviously, that he's going to be anti. But here's what he said. He said federal law cannot be nullified by any state law, and that Missouri legislators are aware of that. This didn't nullify federal law. What it did was prevented federal laws from being enacted that infringed on the Second Amendment rights, in other words, federal rights of Missourians. He says, the practical effects are counterintuitive to its stated purpose. No. It says, while purporting to protect citizens, it exposes citizens to greater harm by interfering with the federal government's ability to enforce lawfully enacted firearms regulations designed by Congress for the purpose of protecting citizens within the limits. See, that's just it. There are no limits within the Constitution on the Second Amendment. Everybody says there are. There are not. By the way, when somebody gives you the argument, well, when the Second Amendment was written, all they had were muskets. Point out to them, because they'll usually argue this behind a keyboard on a social media site, point out that the First Amendment was written with quill and ink pen. A friggin' well, inkwell, dipping a quill into it. Point that out. Especially when they start talking about, you have to protect people on the internet. Yeah, I'm not really tolerant of stupidity these days. I'm going to have to grow up a little bit. So I just don't know where to go with this. As I said, the Missouri AG is going to appeal it, and he expects better results. Now, there are certain things that they probably could have tightened up within it. Because it shouldn't, you know, declared invalid all federal laws. It should have simply said, does not allow federal law that infringes on the Second Amendment rights. To say invalid, no. Simply that Missouri cannot, you know, Missouri must protect its citizens first. But that's, you know, that's water under the bridge at this point. Got another internet laughy, although it's not really that funny in a sense. It says, Biden tells residents of East Palestine, give up drinking water for Lyft. Oh, my God. You know, that's true, though. Here's another one. This is a video on Babylon Bee. It says, billions of lives saved by man wearing mask while driving alone. Oh, God. Amazing the stuff that you hear and that people, you know, I mean, yeah, I still see people driving with masks in the car by themselves. I know it's impossible to believe. Let's go a little more Tommy Bolin. This is Marching Powder from his teaser album. Now this one features Jan Hammer as well as David Sanborn. It's a star-packed album for sure. And so it kind of gives you the idea that maybe this guy was starting to be well-known and people wanting to play on his album is a pretty good indication of that. This is Marching Powder. Yeah, that's Marching Powder off the teaser album. Now, in addition to a little bit of David Sanborn that you hear there, you hear the heavy influence of Jan Hammer on the synthesizer. Hammer had not played with Jeff Beck on the Blow by Blow album, which came out 6 or 7 months earlier than Teaser did. Again, though, you hear a lot of influence between Beck and Boland, Jeff Beck and Tommy Boland. But now, Jan Hammer had not played on Blow by Blow, but did on Teaser, and he also then, of course, played on Wired with Jeff Beck. They had started touring already before that, by that time. Now, the problem with Teaser as an album was that it was co-promoted with Deep Purple's release, Come Taste the Band, and didn't really give it the – I mean, they did one or two Teaser songs during that tour, Deep Purple did, but they would not go full on with the album. And so it didn't do as well as had been hoped. Now, of course, he then went on to record Private Eyes, which came out in 1976, 77, right around the time of his death was when it was released. And Private Eyes definitely went a different direction, definitely went more fusion, had elements of jazz, blues, even some reggae sounding. But also had the hard rock stuff in there as well. But he went away from using all, you know, stars. He used Norma Jean Bell on backing vocals and on saxophone. And he used basically, you know, studio musicians, friends and stuff, but no big names to round out the album. So let's play Sweet Burgundy for you. It's one of my favorite Boland songs.
Just to live too fast.
That, of course, is Sweet Burgundy. Now, I said he didn't use much star power. Bobby Hall, she was a percussionist who gained some fame in the soul and jazz arenas. Carmine Appice actually played drums, not on that song, but on one of the other songs on the album, Someday We'll Bring Our Love Home. He, of course, with Beck Bogart and Appice, and then, of course, before that, played with Vanilla Fudge. So that was, you know, that was the, I guess you'd say, the bluesy, more jazzy side of Tommy Bowen, sort of that haunting refrain on the guitar, the coda as it leads the song out. Brilliant stuff. Absolutely wonderful sound. Back to a little bit of basketball. Iowa State and Baylor are underway. They're at halftime now in the Big 12 tournament. Baylor up 41-38. And the Rutgers-Michigan game, TV timeout with 7:45 left in the game. Rutgers now up by 6, 45-39. So they could be pushing Michigan to the side. We'll see. We will see. So let's close out this federal judge thing. As I said, it's an Obama appointee. You pretty much expect that. You can say that the DOJ went judge shopping. They all do it. I should have Hawkeye Mike talk about just that sometime, how attorneys go judge shopping. And Mike worked for two different federal judges as clerking for them. So he's, you know, pretty much helped write opinions. They probably did a better job of it than the judges would have, working by themselves, frankly. But, you know, you can't. When you get into the judge shopping, you know, when you're talking about something that directly affects or is directly related to an actual Bill of Rights amendment, in this case, the Second Amendment, that's where you start getting into iffy ground as far as I'm concerned. I mean, the Bill of Rights is sacrosanct. You know, it's one thing to talk about amendments outside the Bill of Rights, but the Bill of Rights itself is sacrosanct. To dump on the Second Amendment or the First Amendment or whatever is to dump on all of them. They are not part and parcel. They are in as one. Any part of it missing or any part of it that's infringed means you infringe upon all of them. So that's where I have a problem with this. As I said, or as the article said, the AG, Missouri AG, is going to appeal it, and he expects to get a better result elsewhere. Andrew Bailey is his name, so we'll see. He said he'll go to the Eighth Circuit Court. We'll see there. We'll just see. One little last internet laughy before we close it out with a song I'd promised. It's a longer song, so I couldn't really do it during a regular part of Hank Jones Poly Sports, but let's get this last. The headline, Fauci jealous as China getting all the credit for creating COVID. Oh, I know people that have met Fauci and like him. I don't know why. I can't for the life of me understand why, because I think the guy is a criminal, a crook. I think he's evil. I think he helped a huge fraud on the American people and on our electoral system as a result. But that's perfect, because that's probably true. He probably does think he should get credit for COVID, even though 3 days before the declaration of the pandemic, he said, Americans don't need to alter their behavior in any way. I got him sounding more like George Wrangle than I am Fauci. Okay, I said I would do it. I said I'd play it. I want to play it. Let's close this out. We're going to play Post-Toasty. This is if you went to the University of Iowa anytime in the late 70s, early 80s, you, of course, know this song. The beginning sort of sounded similar to the J.J. Cale song made famous by Eric Clapton, Cocaine. It had that power chord beginning, although better power chords than Clapton's, but a sort of a similar sounding intro. Bowen's is a little more powerful. How's that? It goes from power chord to background vocals that actually almost sound like Whitney Houston, actually, to a soft interlude, and then rounds it out with a very nice couple different nice guitar solos, but a guitar solo to close it out to take it out to the end of the song. This is Post Toasty. And that is Post Toasty from Tommy Bolin, probably his best known song to later fans because of it, again, its similarity of those chords at the beginning to Cocaine from Clapton. I completely forgot. Reggie McBride played bass on that album on Private Eyes. Reggie McBride, in case you don't know, he's played with everybody. Stevie Wonder, Minnie Riperton, Denise Williams, Queen Latifah. I mean, he's literally played with everybody. And that was, you heard it there, the influence of Reggie McBride, who also has a sort of a similar sound to Fernando Saunders, who played with Jeff Beck for a while. But just a great song. It's not just the fact that it starts out rocking. It has some beautiful, as I said, three beautiful guitar solos. That are all different. They're not all the same sound. They're not all the same. You know, it's not a continuation of one, not a continuation of the other. So that was Tommy Bolin with Private Eyes. The cut was Post Toasty, of course, his most famous. And, if you went to the University of Iowa between late 1970s and early 80s, you heard that in a lot of bars, you know, places that would just kind of, you know, I don't mean the dance clubs, but I mean a lot of bars would play Bolin. And, rightfully so. He was from Iowa. He was from Sioux City. A song off of his Zephyr album was actually in the Iowa Music Hall of Fame, as a matter of fact. So if you get a chance, Google it up. Listen to more Tommy Bolin. Like I said, there's a session with he and Jeff Beck. And again, through March he is, or through February and into March he is our featured great guitarists who are no longer with us. A couple weeks I'll let you know who our next one is. In the meantime, check back with us tomorrow. Vito should be on around noon with Conservative Casual Friday. If not Vito, maybe Andrew will be back. And keep checking in to see what we've got going. As I said, I ran down the shows and some good stuff. Good stuff all week, every day of the week, really. I'll be back Wednesday with Hank Jones Poly Sports at 6 o'clock. In the meantime, folks, have a great weekend. It is good weekend to be a college basketball fan. It'll be a great weekend the following weekend when the tournament March Madness gets into swing. In the meantime, Michigan and Rutgers, it's late. Rutgers has gone up by 14, 56-42, or 58-42 with about 2 minutes left. Looks like Michigan's road ends here. They will be 17-15. They probably got a shot at the NIT, but yeah, they're probably not going to make it the NCAAs at this point. And Rutgers moves on. Hawkeyes up at 2:30 Eastern. Go Hawks. In the meantime, thanks for being here, folks. I want to thank my sister for listening in on the phone lines, and we will be back next week. Have a good afternoon. Have a great weekend. God bless.